We're talking about making workplaces more accessible here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, thanks for being here. So even with the strength of our labor market, people with disabilities are strikingly underemployed. The latest data from mid-2018, only 29% of working-age Americans with disabilities were in the workforce, and that's compared to three-quarters of workers without a disability. But that may be changing as companies see an untapped talent pool when they become more inclusive. So what questions do you have about accommodating employees in the workplace? Are you an employer who's taken steps to make your job site a more inclusive space? What have you done? We're at 800-642-1234. Monica Murphy is a managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. She represents and advocates for people with disabilities individually, as well as within systems and public policy. Monica, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
What do you make of this latest data showing that people with disabilities are joining the workforce at a rate that outpaces people without disabilities?
It's about time. Unfortunately, they still are much less represented and still have a higher rate of unemployment than people without disabilities.
So what's going on with those numbers, though? Why do we see an uptick?
I think part of it is the improved economy. I think we still aren't quite at the numbers pre-recession in terms of people with disabilities, but it is moving up, as you said. Part of it, I think, is historically, it's the people with disabilities were the last hired and the first fired. So even though we're out of the recession and the economy is booming, it's slower going to get them involved at as high a rate as other people.
Last hired, first fired. Is that still a reality in our country and here in Wisconsin?
I think so. Unfortunately, I do think it's getting better. I think employers are much more conscious about hiring people with disabilities and are also more aware that they aren't as afraid as they used to be. I think they're more comfortable with it, and they understand that accommodations and working with people with disabilities is not as complicated as they feared.
What technological and medical advancements have you been seeing that have really opened new doors for the way people with disabilities are able to live and do their work?
Well, interestingly enough, I think what has made technology better for all of us has made it better for people with disabilities. Things that years ago were only used by people with disabilities, we're all using now. Voice-activated software. Things that, whether it's, cameras at your doorbell, or all types of technology have become so much more ubiquitous that it's made things a lot easier for people with disabilities. They don't stand out as something different anymore. They're just like the person next to them.
So the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, it's been a law now for almost 30 years. How do you see it accommodating employees with disabilities in the workplace?
Well, I think it's key to that. I mean, that was the landmark law that made it a requirement for employers across the country to provide accommodations to people with disabilities. I mean, we've had an accommodation law in Wisconsin for longer than that, but it certainly is the all-encompassing law that sets out an employer's obligations and how the process is supposed to work.
We're talking about making workplaces more accessible, what companies are doing on this front. Monica Murphy is a managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. That's a nonprofit that works to protect the rights of people with disabilities. Are you an employer who has taken steps to make your job site a more inclusive workspace? What have you done recently? What obstacles have you run into? How do you think your own work handles making accommodations? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Sarah now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am entering my 16th year of teaching as a special ed teacher, and taught 10 years at the high school and now at the elementary. And I just think one of the biggest things I noticed as I helped some of my high school students transition into the workforce was the willingness and ability of businesses to offer that training and understanding of different disability areas and what they mean, so that that ignorance wasn't there and that acceptance was there and that equality was really part of that environment of work.
Sarah, have you had to do quite a bit of myth busting about disabilities?
Constantly. And I feel like it's not out of malintent. I feel that so much of the comments or just the lack of understanding is not intentional. But unless we as a community really become intentional, that becomes our responsibility, the comments that we make and the way that we treat each other.
Sarah, thanks for these thoughts. Monica, ignorance is really holding back the workplace.
It has, and it continues to do so. And it's really a shame because there's a lot of great information out there. I advise anyone, whether you're an employer or an employee with disability, or a potential employee with a disability, to visit the Job Accommodations Network. It's a fabulous website that provides many ideas for accommodating all types of disabilities. They have guidelines for a whole list of disabilities and kinds of accommodations that might be appropriate and the kinds of tasks that can be accommodated certain ways. So there's a lot of great information out there. I think people just need to avail themselves of it.
Let's turn to the Wisconsin Capitol for a moment, where the state assembly rule currently prevents Representative Jimmy Anderson from joining committee meetings over the phone. And the Representative Anderson is paralyzed. He has trouble attending meetings in person. You're currently his attorney. How does the ADA apply here?
Well, so the Americans with Disabilities Act has three main titles. Title I deals with employment. Title II is what's kicked in this situation, and that applies to all aspects of government services. So anything that the government does, whether it's, your local municipal government or it's, in this case, the state government, is bound by some of the requirements under Title II of the ADA to make their programs and services accessible to people with disabilities.
So Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and other assembly leaders have declined to accommodate the request. And Assembly Speaker Voss said he didn't think the federal disability law's requirements applied to the legislature. What do we know about the law there?
Well, certainly there are some open questions, but I think that there's certainly aspects of it that clearly apply in this case. If you look at even some guidance put out by the United States Department of Justice involving Title II. One of the examples they give is of a legislator who can't attend meetings and suggesting that accommodating that person by allowing telephone or video conferencing would be an appropriate accommodation.
We're talking about workplace accessibility with Monica Murphy. She's managing attorney at Disability Rights Wisconsin. Are you an employer who's taken steps to make your job site a more inclusive space? What changes have you made? What obstacles have you run into? Are you the parent of a child in school who has a disability? What is it like for you? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in just a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about making workplaces more inclusive and accessible for people with disabilities. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A state assembly rule currently prevents Representative Jimmy Anderson from joining committee meetings over the phone. Representative Anderson sent us a statement about the assembly leader's decision to not allow him to phone into meetings, and he said, quote, To deny reasonable accommodations for someone with a disability is not only illegal, according to the American with Disabilities Act, it is morally wrong. He went on to say, quote, it speaks to the fear every disabled person has that they will be defined by their limitations and denied full access to American life, whether it's a job opportunity or eating at a restaurant or serving in office, unquote. Unquote. Do you see, Monica Murphy, what the state assembly rule is permeating other aspects of life? Oh, Monica, you there? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. I don't quite understand.
Do you see that this state assembly rule is permeating other aspects of life in so as to say that whether it's a job opportunity or eating at a restaurant or serving in office?
I think that any failure to accommodate people with disabilities, especially when it's something that could be quite easily done, sends a message to them that they're not welcome. And I know, for example, in Mr. Anderson's case, that he's very concerned because he feels very strongly that people with disabilities should feel that they can be a part of civic life, that they can engage in public service, and they should feel free to be able to run for office if that they so choose. So I think that failing to accommodate people with disabilities makes them feel unwelcome.
What do you see as the limitations to the ADA?
Well, the law itself has some limitations on it in terms of not requiring things that would be an undue hardship or things that would fundamentally alter the goods or services that are being provided.
So when we look at employers here in our country, how good are they at complying with the Americans with Disabilities Act, making the office more inclusive? How are we doing almost 30 years later?
Well, we jokingly say that the answer to everything under the Americans with Disabilities Act is it depends. Mm. And as far as employers are concerned, you run the gamut from really great, welcoming, inclusive employers to employers who don't get it at all. So, you know, to paint with a broad brush is pretty difficult because there is such a variety in terms of what folks are doing and how things are going for people.
We're talking with Monica Murphy. She's managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin, and she represents and advocates for people with disabilities. You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Monica, how does Wisconsin compare to the rest of the country when it comes to laws protecting the rights of people with disabilities? How are we doing here at home?
In some ways, we do pretty good. As I mentioned earlier, we had an employment law requiring accommodations before there was a federal law, before there was the Americans with Disabilities Act. On the other hand, we don't have a very good law when it comes to public accommodations. So, as I mentioned earlier, the ADA has three main titles. Title one is employment, Title two is public services, government entities, and Title three is public accommodations, like places that are open to the public, restaurants, stores, doctor's offices, medical facilities, et cetera. And our law that prohibits discrimination by those kinds of entities does not require accommodations. And so our state law is pretty weak when it comes to those kinds of things.
You've also seen complaints about medical facilities not doing enough to accommodate workers. What's going on there?
If I had the answer to that question, I'd be in much better shape. It's very interesting to me that, you know, I get calls from employees of all different kinds of businesses and all different kinds of work that they do, but it strikes me that I get an inordinate number of calls from people who work for hospitals or nursing homes or other kinds of medical facilities when you would think that those employers would be best at accommodating and would understand the need for it. And it's been my experience that it's the opposite.
What are the most common accommodation issues in healthcare that you're hearing?
Sometimes it's hours. You know, those are very demanding jobs, and a lot of accommodations can involve, you know, if you have to take certain medications, it takes you a longer to get going in the morning, or if you have certain other kinds of medical conditions, you need to, you know, keep your limits to 8 or 10 hours a day of work. So hours is a big issue, but I've heard all different kinds of things, from not accommodating employees with hearing loss to physical access issues to not understanding people's mental health issues. So it's kind of all over the board.
There was this report from the business consulting firm Accenture. It says the U.S. gross domestic product could get a real boost, up to $25 billion, if just 1% more of people with disabilities joined the labor force. They really see an untapped labor pool here, a whole new range of talent. Do you see an economic impact when companies make more inclusive hiring decisions?
Well, they aren't reporting their bottom line to me, but I certainly see an improvement in terms of the acceptance of people with disabilities. They, you know, businesses that visibly hire people with disabilities, I think their customers appreciate that. I think, obviously, people with disabilities appreciate that. And I think that it just creates a more inclusive environment for everyone.
So how can employers make sure they're ADA compliant? What should they assess?
I think they need to step back and imagine themselves coming through the door as a new employee with a disability, or even prior to being an employee. So what's their hiring process? Where are they looking for employees? What's the message they send to prospective employees? Are they clear that they are an inclusive workplace? Do they have processes that aren't particularly accessible to people with disabilities? And that could be in terms of how one applies. Are they, you know, can you only do it a certain way? Can you only do it a certain place? Are they welcoming to people with disabilities? Can you get in the door of their workplace? If you're someone who uses a wheelchair, can you get in the door? It's just kind of trying to put yourself in the shoes of the individual with a disability and imagine what kind of barriers they would see, or how they would perceive whether an employer was welcoming or not.
Let's bring in Jane now in Appleton. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. I just want to make a couple of comments. My daughter is 41, and she has disabilities, and our entire program for raising her was to include her in all aspects of education and the community. And as an adult, she has had employment in the community with support from job coaches and an agency that provides support in the workplace. But now several of our barriers are home health care, which is unavailable because of the reimbursement from Medicaid, which you've discussed in other programs, and transportation, reliable transportation and safe transportation for a person using a wheelchair. But then when she gets out into the community, it's the same thing that most people are impacted by in terms of accessibility, from getting into the building to using a restroom if you have a disability. And, you know, the ADA rules apply, but over the last 30 years, as you said, a lot of things aren't there yet. Simple things like moving a wastebasket in a bathroom, or just having reasonable accommodations in a store. Most people are challenged by the clutter and the closeness of the holding racks, so it would be hard for a person with a disability to work in that environment. So I just want to bring up some of those points.
Yeah, Jane, it sounds like there are just some really obvious things out there that just haven't changed. How have job coaches been?
Well, we have an agency that's part of their service. They provide vocational support. So that's been a very big asset for our family because they help advocate and communicate in the workplace for our daughter. And again, she has cognitive disabilities as well, but she has worked as a greeter and she's worked as a floor supervisor in a way in order to keep items on a shelf. She was employed at Toys R Us for 15 years. So we've had some good experiences, but now because of the barriers of the Medicaid reimbursement, and she uses a wheelchair, it's taken 3 months to get repaired because of prior authorization. So those are some real-life issues for people with disabilities.
Well, Jane, thank you so much. Monica, thank you for your time.
Sure.
Monica Murphy is a managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. She represents and advocates for people with disabilities. And for disclosure, Disability Rights Wisconsin is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, the Green Bay Packers kick off their regular season tonight. We have a preview. What do you think of the Packers this year? 800-642-1234. We'll get back after a news update on the Ideas Network. The Packers' regular season starts tonight. They take on the Bears at Chicago. We're getting a season preview here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After the final roster cuts last week, General Manager Brian Gutekunst described a team under transformation but still focused on results.
I like our veteran leadership. You know, we do have a lot of new in our locker room and our coaching staff. And so, there's going to be a time for us to kind of figure some things out, but I do like kind of how they're coming together right now. But I do think it's more important how we finish.
What will you be watching for in tonight's game against the Bears? Equal time here for Bears fans, by the way. What do you think are your chances against the Pack this year? Your forecast is welcome. 800-642-1234. Robert Zizzo is the USA Today Network regional sports editor for Wisconsin. He was previously editor of the Green Bay Press Gazette. Robert, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, let's start with the organization itself. We just heard there from the GM, Brian Gutekunst, talking about new faces. That includes new head coach, Matt LaFleur. Has the preseason revealed anything about what LaFleur will look like and how this team might change?
It's revealed very little, actually. The preseason is really a time when teams tend to stay vanilla in their schemes. They don't want to give too much away for when the games really start to count. In addition to that, the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, didn't take a live snap in any of the four preseason games. So there's a lot to be seen tonight as to what this team will look like this season.
Well, isn't a new coach like LaFleur kind of between a rock and a hard spot? We're watching for any missteps and then blaming it on, well, he's just a new coach.
Right. The standard in Green Bay, established, throughout the 101 years the team has been around, and especially since 1992, is very high. So the expectations are that the last two seasons were just a blip and they'll get back to their winning ways. So there won't be a lot of, I don't think, there will be a lot of patience for a slow start or a poor season this year. If they go 3 years in a row without making the playoffs, there might be some serious questions about whether this team is returning to the 70s and 80s.
Hmm. Do we know anything about how Matt LaFleur's strategy looks like for winning games? What is his strategy?
I think one of the things that stands out most about Matt LaFleur and what probably got him hired here was that he's part of a younger group of NFL coaches and assistant coaches who have a different type of offense. Offenses in the NFL tend to go in cycles, and there's always new ideas, but a lot of them are borrowed from the past. And I think this new offense that he will try to establish is based a lot on what the Los Angeles Rams have done the last couple of years to great success. And some of the tenets of it are getting back to the running game, setting up the passing game as opposed to the other way around, which the Packers of the last 10 or 12 years have been more of a passing team. So the idea is that you set up your strength by establishing something that the opponent has to focus on trying to stop.
So that's offense. What might defense look like this season?
The defense will have a big makeover as well. There are probably going to be four new starters on that side of the ball. They signed four free agents over the offseason who will start, and they drafted two defensive players in the first round this year. So they're really putting a focus on a defense that is in its second year with its defensive coordinator, Mike Pettine.
Talking with Robert Zizzo, he's the USA Today Network regional sports editor for Wisconsin. We're giving a preview here of the regular season for the Packers starting tonight. Do you live in a home with Packers and Bears fans? So how do you manage that rivalry? Do you watch their games together? Did you watch any of the Packers preseason games this year? Will you watch the season opener tonight? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So last year, the Packers also opened their season against the Chicago Bears. And fans might remember this moment when a sack took Aaron Rodgers out of the game.
Roy Robertson Harris, number 95. With the sack, and that is a sight that has everybody's heart stopping at Lambeau Field.
Heart stopping at Lambeau Field. That was Al Michaels, the broadcaster, as Rodgers there limped around the field. And then we later learned he played injured all last season. So do we know if Aaron Rodgers is back to being healthy this year?
He appears to be. What I've heard from reporters in practice is that he's showing no ill effects from the injuries that he's had over the past few years. He will turn 36 this year, which for a football player is middle age, if not nearing the end of his career. For normal people, it's young-ish. But and I think that they really need to put a focus on protecting him. And I think what this new offense will do is having that running game set up the passing game might help keep defenders off of his legs.
Mm-hmm. So do they have a plan at all in place for a successor? Are we getting any signals there?
Well, they haven't spent a high draft pick on a quarterback, which is what teams tend to do when it's time for a successor. They feel as though he still has 3, 4, maybe 5 years left. Tom Brady, who's over 40, is still going strong. Mm-hmm. So I think the modern quarterback can go a little bit longer. Their backup this year, Tim Boyle, is young and raw and has potential, but he's untested to this point. It's probably another year or two before they'll put a lot of investment into Aaron Rodgers' successor.
Why do you see these quarterbacks playing later in their years and playing over 40? Is it because of coverage that they have less contact, or what's going on?
I think the game has evolved to the point where they're protecting quarterbacks much more than they did even 20 years ago. If you look at film from the 60s or the 70s, you see late hits on quarterbacks. You see quarterbacks just getting hit after they're out of bounds and no penalty flag. I think the league has figured out that the quarterback is the key to a team's success, and they're the marquee players. And so it's in their best interest to protect them. I also think that modern-day athletes are probably in better condition to play longer just based on, the diet that we have and the exercise techniques that we have that we didn't have 25 years ago.
Right, and there's so many people invested in keeping that quarterback healthy.
Oh, absolutely. The investment teams make in their top player is enormous compared to most other players on the team, and most often the quarterback makes more than the coach, who makes more than the general manager. So it's the biggest investment in the organization.
Let's look at relationships for just a bit. Last year, and again during the offseason, there were some reports about quarterback Aaron Rodgers having a poor relationship with the former coach. So what do we see there? The former coach, Mike McCarthy. Do we know if Matt LaFleur is getting along with Rodgers?
I don't think we really know. So much of what we see is just in bits and pieces. When we're at practice, we're at a distance. When we're in the locker room, we only have a certain amount of time. When we talk to the coach and the quarterback, it's often on a podium situation. So we don't really know. I think the questions that we've asked have revealed answers that show that no one's really tipping their hand. No one's really saying. Obviously, the relationship between the quarterback and the play caller, who in this case is the head coach, is very important. There were a lot of questions about whether Aaron Rodgers will be allowed to change plays that the coach calls when he's at the line of scrimmage. And it's become sort of this thing this summer where we've asked that question a lot, and the coach has sort of gotten exasperated with answering the question and saying, this is football, and if I trust the quarterback enough that if he sees something and decides to change the play, that's the right call.
Mm. How do other teams handle that? Is that just like on a case-by-case basis of how much latitude these quarterbacks have?
Yes, it is. It has a lot to do with the experience of the quarterback in his ability to assess very quickly what the defense looks like and whether that play will work or not. Some younger quarterbacks don't really have that sort of leeway or in some cases that ability to do it. And it also really comes down to the trust between the coach and the quarterback. And if there's trust there, then there's much more latitude.
Yeah, that runs deep. How much ramp up do these new draft picks need to really understand the Green Bay Packers to the core and to be a real Green Bay Packer?
Well, I think if you're talking about being a Packer in its culture, it's pretty easy to get ramped up when you come to Green Bay, which is the smallest city in all of professional sports. It's 110,000 people, and you're sort of in a fishbowl to some extent because you live with your fans very closely. It's not like living in New York City or Los Angeles. And so I think they get that sense right away what this team means to this city and this state just by the seeing Green Bay Packers everywhere.
Yeah. Robert Zizzo with us, USA Today Network regional sports editor for Wisconsin. You as well, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Packers open their regular season schedule tonight at the Chicago Bears. Kickoff 7:20. We're getting a season preview here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tonight, it's just a season opener for the Packers against their biggest rival. The game is the first under a new head coach after more than a decade with Mike McCarthy. So is the new coach nervous? Here is Matt LaFleur talking with reporters this week.
It is literally one day at a time. And put your best foot forward each and every day. And, then I think you can go into a game with a calm mind and a confidence.
Packers fans, do you feel any jitters heading into this season? What do you think of the team? Did you notice any changes under the new head coach? Are you happy with off-season changes? Join in, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We have Robert Zizzo, who is the USA Today Network regional sports editor for Wisconsin, and he stays with us. Well, Robert, the Packers haven't been to the playoffs since 2015. Do you see any issues from last season that just haven't been resolved or addressed?
Well, I think the biggest issue right now is whether some key players can stay healthy. And obviously the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, is the main person there. But there's two other players that really, if they stay healthy, can make their season. If they are injured for most of the year, could break their season. And it's Aaron Jones, the running back, who, when he's on the field, is one of the best in the league. But he's been he's had trouble staying on the field. And then the other is Kevin King, a cornerback on the defense, who has played well when he's been there, but he's missed more than half the games, I think, that he's been available for. So I think that's the biggest thing that is going to be a key for them this season from last season.
So how do they stack up against division rivals like the Bears, like the Vikings, and the Lions?
Well, I think this year everyone is unsure. If you look at what the national prognosticators as well as our own reporters are saying, there's no real consensus about who is the team that is the one to beat. Personally, I think the Bears probably have the best chance of repeating as NFC North champions. They were 12-4 last year. They return a great defense, a youngish quarterback, and then you have the Vikings, who are a lot like that. They have a good defense. They potentially have a strong running game, and I think that the Packers, again, they could finish anywhere from third to first in that division. Well, actually, they could finish fourth behind the Lions if some of the things don't go right. But it's really, it's not like the past 5 or 6 years where you could kind of predict where the Packers were going to be. 10-6, 11-5, win the division, and then see where they go from there. This year, it's a lot of question.
How deep is the talent on these other teams? You know, say you have someone out on an injury. Are there good backups that would really hinder the Packers from winning?
I think there are, you know, it depends on, you know, how many players go down. The NFL is sort of a game of attrition, and you do have to have depth. And but if that depth is at key positions, you're better off than if it's depth that isn't needed. So it's really sort of, you know, up in the air as to whether or not you've equipped your team well enough, anticipating where you might need that depth.
So as you said earlier, Aaron Rodgers didn't play in the preseason. He's talked about tonight's game against the Bears as a first look into how the team has changed.
It's so new, you know, it's so different than what we've done in the past. I think it will be it'll be fun to kind of lay it out there on Thursday. And
all right, so this will be fun. You know, fun for us, maybe, but is this a litmus test for the entire season to come?
I think I don't think it is, actually. I think this is a really difficult start for a first-year coach with a quarterback who didn't play in the preseason, a new offense. You're playing against your division rival, which won the division last year, on the road, at night, Thursday night football. There's so many factors that play against the Packers in this game in particular that I don't think this will be the team that you will see by midseason or the end of the season. I think this will be probably something that will rely a lot on how things play out in terms of who gets the breaks, who gets the ball bouncing their way, who gets the calls.
Well, let's bring in Clifford now in La Crosse. Good morning, Clifford. What do you think of the Packers?
I think they are a cool team. They have cool jerseys, and I like how they play.
Well, Clifford, what is so cool about the Packers to you? Why do you watch?
Because Tim Boyle and Aaron Rodgers have very good throws, and like a few days like a few weeks ago, they got a touchdown from Tim Boyle.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been a Packers fan?
3 years.
All right. Well, that sounds good. And you're going to stick with them this season, huh?
Yep.
All right. Well, Clifford, thanks so much. Robert, Clifford sees a passing game.
Clifford knows what he's talking about. Both Aaron Rodgers and Tim Boyle have very strong arms. That's one of the aspects that the Packers liked about Tim Boyle. Even though he's raw, young, he has a very strong arm.
Well, since the team hasn't won a lot of games in recent years, has that made it any easier for fans to get tickets at Lambeau Field? What's Lambeau like these days?
I think Lambeau will continue to be full and loud and exciting for fans. I do think, however, that there's a little bit of wait and see with some fans, because we noticed at the open practices, this training camp, that the stands weren't quite as full as they've been in previous years. I'm not sure if that is an indication of a lack of interest, a wait-and-see attitude, or just one of those things where, you know, there were other things going on, the weather, all sorts of other factors. But I think you have a second-year general manager, a first-year coach, and maybe some of those bandwagon fans have jumped off and are waiting to see if they want to jump back on.
So what does it cost these days to attend a game?
It depends on where you sit, but tickets are at least $100 per seat. And on the secondary market, they're much more than that. So, yeah, you have an investment to make if you want to go see a Packer game, especially if it's a family of four or so.
Has the fan experience of going to these games changed since last season? Are there any new amenities?
Well, I think you're going to see, you know, the continued evolution of the Titletown District, which is just adjacent to Lambeau Field, where fans can spend hours literally doing all sorts of activities and preparing for the game. There's a full-length football field with goalposts and everything where a lot of people congregate and throw a football around. The tailgating experience is sort of unlike no other. Green Bay, a lot of people park their cars in people's yards and they congregate there, and it is a very unique experience. As far as inside the stadium, they tried something new this preseason where when the Packers scored, they sounded a foghorn,
mm-hmm.
Which had very mixed result or very mixed reaction from fans. And then in the second preseason game, when the Packers scored, they flickered the stadium lights on and off, which of course works at night, but won't be very effective during the day. So we'll have to see what it's like.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Kate.
Robert Zizzo is the USA Today Network regional sports editor for Wisconsin. He was previously editor of the Green Bay Press Gazette. Just ahead, the head of Wisconsin's Humane Society joins us to talk about animal rescue efforts and trends in adoption here in Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.